Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
It's all right to cry. Crying gets the sad out of you. It's all right to cry.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. How you doing?
Good, sir.
Are you doing good?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We put the two of us together, and you've got a little podcast called Stuff You Should Know. That's what this is.
You get more than that.
Even though this was an abnormal start, semi-abnormal.
Yeah.
We've had Devo kick us off before.
Yeah, but hey, Devo's got nothing on Rosie Grier.
No, you want to talk a little bit about what
well,
we heard?
Well, yeah, obviously, children of the 70s might recognize that song, might be very fond of some of you, mm-hmm. like it is to me, from the awesome album Free to Be You and Me, which Marlo Thomas mm-hmm. headed up this record in the 70s. Mm-hmm. To basically build kids up, make them feel better about, you know, if you're a boy and you're a little effeminate and you like to play with dolls, there was one called William Wants a Doll.
Yeah.
If you're a boy and, you know, you wanted to cry, Rosie Grier's there to tell you it's okay.
Yeah.
Might make you feel better.
Yeah.
And there was one about, like, treating your grandparents with respect, and it's okay for girls to, like, do boy things and boys to do girl things, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's very 70s.
It's okay for girls to punch in the arm.
Yeah.
Pretty hard.
I think there was a song about that.
I love the 70s for that reason.
It was great, though, man. I listened to this one, like, a lot.
Did you?
Yeah, Mel Brooks was on it, and Anne Bancroft, and, I mean, it was a litany of awesome 70s guests.
That's nice. So thank you, Marlo Thomas.
Yeah.
And now thank you to Uncle Chuck for bringing it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the show we recorded several weeks back.
Okay. Wow. The focus, obviously, on this one is crying. If you notice the title, that shouldn't come as much of a surprise.
No.
I have a little story for you.
Let's hear it.
Have you heard of the movie Water for Elephants?
Yeah.
It's like Reese Witherspoon and the dude from Twilight.
Yeah, Emily saw that.
Is it any good?
She enjoyed it.
Well, I was researching whether or not elephants can cry, and uh-huh. apparently at one of the premieres, I think the premiere in Australia for this movie, the elephant co-star was there, and it started crying.
Really?
And apparently everybody was really affected by this elephant just crying in, you know, the middle of public.
Did it think the Australians were going to eat him?
I don't know what the elephant was thinking, and we're not even certain whether the elephant was crying, because as far as we can tell, humans are the only species that cry emotionally as the result of an emotion.
Yes.
But it is possible that elephants and gorillas mm-hmm. are the two likeliest candidates as it stands now,
yeah.
do as well. But we're so far from understanding whether elephants do that we don't even know how often humans cry,
right.
let alone whether elephants can cry for an emotion.
Yeah, there's been a lot more studies done on laughter and its benefits than crying, I found out.
Yeah, I've noticed, Chuck, we've been doing this, what, for coming up on
20 years?
4 years.
Yeah.
We're coming up onto our fourth year eventually, this year. Mm-hmm. And I found, like, when we encounter stuff like this, fields, topics that haven't fully been sussed out,
yeah.
there's two ways it can go. It's either loaded with total BS hypotheses.
Conjecture, sure.
That, like, maybe make sense in a really 8-year-old common sense way.
Yeah.
Or are just filled with awesome, like, ideas of, just basically are demonstrations of how great humanity can use its mind, right?
Right.
This is the former. And I'm sorry for tapping on the table. I know that that's a new habit of mine and that it screws things up, but it's for emphasis.
Yeah. As far as the gorilla thing, I can direct people, if you want to cry, to the video of Coco the gorilla.
Mm-hmm. The sign language gorilla?
Yeah, yeah. She had a pet kitten at one point, and it's very cute, and you see this kitten and Coco bonding, and it's those videos are the best anyway.
And she accidentally breaks its neck, no. and Gary Sinise has to shoot her in the back of the head?
No. Gary Sinise, actually, I think it was a chokehold. But the cat, of course, gets out and gets hit by a car and killed, and they have on tape the woman going and telling Coco that the kitten is dead. And Coco, dude, I might start crying right now.
Wow.
Coco starts making the signs for bad and sad and frown, and then cry, and like, dude, you got to see it.
I mean,
I'm a weepy guy anyway, but I was at my desk earlier just like fighting it back. But then I really encourage you to go look at the video right after that. Coco gets a new kitten.
Oh, yeah?
That'll just make you feel better all over again.
Good. I'm glad. Is it in like the replay screen? It's one of the ones that pops up as the next
one. It actually has a pop-up while you're watching this. Like, click on here to see Coco get a new kitten.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, it looks like Coco is very much emotional, whether or not Coco is actually crying. And whether or not animals get emotional is, right. is under debate.
And that's a whole other topic in and of itself.
Sure.
But I guess the point is we're only kind of beginning to get a loose grasp on why we cry and how we cry. And so the research is kind of insufficient, I guess. But we're just going to go through some of the ideas of what's behind crying. We have something of a good grasp on the physiology of it.
Yeah, and this whole thing, this guy that surmised about our ancestors,
yeah,
I thought that was so weak.
This is BS hypothesis number one. Do you want to take it, Chuck?
Yeah, Dr. Paul D. McLean theorized that our, you know, cave ancestors would cremate the deceased, mm-hmm. become overcome by emotions, and then the smoke would get in their eyes, which would trigger reflex tears, which we'll talk about. And then all of a sudden, they were just linked forever.
Right.
Emotion and crying.
Exactly.
Or death and mourning and crying, which I think that's
kind of that was the birth of emotional tears.
Yeah.
I don't buy that one either.
I don't either.
But it does lead us segue into what emotional tears are, right? They're one of three types of tears that we've sussed out.
Mm-hmm.
The first being basal tears, which, with or without Coco, you've got right now.
Yes. We cry every day.
Yeah.
10 to what? 5 to 10 ounces?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Were you aware of that?
Well, I didn't know it was that much.
It's almost a bottle of beer.
Yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah.
That makes me want to cry.
What a waste.
I don't know why. Yeah, I mean, obviously your eyes would dry out, so that's just your body's taking care of itself by working up these tears.
And most of that, I guess just about all of the 5 to 10 ounces of basal tears that you produce every day drain through your sinuses, your sinus cavity.
Yeah.
Instead of streaming down your cheeks.
Sure, which you might get stopped up. They sit in here a runny nose when you cry, but I get stopped up personally.
Do you?
Yeah, like stops up my sinuses.
My nose runs generally.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what are tears? I don't think we even said that.
Oh, tears are liquidy secretions of fats, proteins, mucus,
yeah.
oil,
yeah.
but for the most part, water. And depending on the type of tears, this is very significant, though.
Agreed.
Depending on the type of tear, the composition is going to be different.
Yeah.
So if you look at, say, reflex tears, which are designed to rid your eye of some sort of irritant, right?
Yeah. Smoke, dust, onions.
Do you want to tell everybody how onions work?
Yeah.
I feel like it's time that we finally explain that one. Notch that off the list.
There's an enzyme called lacrimatory factor synthase. Mm-hmm. And that is released when you cut into the onion. And then that converts amino acids to sulfenic acid. Mm-hmm. And then that sulfenic acid turns into senropanthethyl S oxide. And that is what irritates your lacrimal glands to cry when you cut an onion.
Right.
And mine really, I think I mentioned this before, mine really go haywire. It burns. It's pretty bad. So I got Emily got me those little goggles.
Can you post a picture of you cutting onions wearing goggles?
I can actually. Yeah, right. Sure.
I'd like to see.
Well,
that.
Not cutting onions, but I tried them on Christmas Day when she got them.
Okay.
Same effect.
But I'm saying the next time that you cut onions wearing these goggles, I'd like to see that.
Okay.
So yeah, you also mentioned another important point, the lacrimal gland. It's in the upper outer region of your eye, and this is where tears are produced.
That's right.
So you've got basal tears, you've got reflex tears, and then you have the emotional tears, the great grand mystery of humanity and why we cry, right?
Right.
So with emotional tears, from what we can... That is a great picture of you wearing goggles.
I just showed
that's
Josh.
Really great.
Yeah, they work too.
You look like... Wow, that's a great... I got to stop right there.
Yep.
But so with emotional tears, what we suspect is going on is that the cerebrum, which registers sadness, says, hey, eyes... says, hey, endocrine system, you're feeling a little blue.
Yeah.
Why don't you go activate the lacrimal glands and let's get the crying commenced.
Yeah, release the hormones.
Yeah. And I don't think it's any coincidence that you express tears at the same time you're expressing emotion.
Right. I would agree with that. And that's what you were kind of talking about earlier, the whole theory of whether or not having a good cry makes you feel better.
Right.
And you mentioned earlier that the composition of the tears differs, and they collected, let's just call them onion tears, for lack of a better, well, we have reflex tears.
You could also call them reflex tears.
They collected onion tears, and they collected sad movie tears, and found that the reflex onion tears were, what, like 98% water?
Yeah.
Whereas the other ones were chock full of sad proteins.
Like prolactin,
uh-huh.
Which is very much involved in the process of producing breast milk, hence the name. It's for lactating, prolactin.
What else? Are you going to say that other one?
Yes, I am, Chuck. It's adrenocorticotropic hormones.
Very nice.
Adrenocorticotropic hormones, which indicate high levels of stress.
So that makes sense.
Which is a commonly experienced thing while you're crying.
Sure.
And then there's leucine encephalin.
That's right. Leucine encephalin.
These episodes have just turned into like this parade of me humiliating myself.
No, you did well.
Leucine encephalin.
Yeah.
Which is an endorphin that reduces pain and improves mood.
Yeah, so it makes sense that you would find these in tears when you might not, in emotional tears instead of reflex tears.
The problem is that not all studies who've looked into this, that have looked into this, have found that crying does make you feel better. There's been plenty of studies that have found the opposite. Most studies, I shouldn't say most, but some studies have found that there's no change whatsoever. People won't feel any better or worse. And one study that required, I think like 1,200? No. There were like 1,200 accounts of crying over like 70 days among like X number of female college students. Mm-hmm. It found that that crying was preceded by 2 days of low mood and preceded by 2 days of low mood. So on either side of a crying incident, there was two bad days before and after. So there wasn't necessarily an improved mood.
Well, and one of the studies that you sent me earlier kind of gave some reasoning behind this, which makes sense to me. One reason might be because laboratory crying, you may not be getting consolation, mm-hmm. which might be what makes you feel better. When someone sees you crying, they come over to pat you on the back and, you know, buck up, camper.
Right.
And the other was...
That's not a realistic setting.
Oh, well, the helplessness factor, which made a lot of sense to me. Like, you're watching the Sarah McLachlan animals dying thing, and a good cry when that doesn't make you feeling better because animals are still dying.
Right.
So there's this helplessness, like when you're watching a sad movie, that like, I can't help these characters.
Right.
So a good cry isn't going to make me feel any better.
No, but it may in a real world setting where
true.
You're crying and it's cathartic and somebody's making you feel better, and then also explaining to you how things actually are better, and you're like, I guess.
Right. So it's kind of a tough nut to crack because when you study something like this, they sit you down in a lab and make you watch Brian's Song, and you know.
I've never seen it.
It's a little clinical.
Brian's Song is?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
Brian's Song's very sad.
Isn't that John Voight?
No, it was Jimmy Kahn and I can't remember who played Gale Sayers, but it was the famous story of the football player dying of cancer.
Yeah.
Gale Sayers' teammate, very sad.
You know, speaking of sad and dying, there's a whole, I wish I would have looked it up ahead of time. I read an article about people who love these books, but you know, like Sweet Valley High?
Yeah.
Imagine if each book was about a different Sweet Valley High girl and they were all dying young.
Oh my God.
But they were like these brave, like captain of the cheerleading squad,
right.
Straight A student, class president, don't ever feel bad for me kind of gals, but
sure.
They always died at the end. And there's like this series of like 50 books of like young adult fiction that's by this one author and that's all like dying young.
Huh. I wonder if the purpose of those was to, you know, prepare kids for losing friends young, because that does happen. Or
I guess, but I mean, this lady's were there, dying all over the place.
Yeah, was it a female author, do you know?
Yes.
Interesting.
I don't remember the name. I'm sure somebody will write in. Please do.
Yeah.
Japan, you want to mention that?
Yeah, I even looked this up to verify, because it sounded a little wacky, but, you know, the Japanese, they're always setting the standard for things like this.
Totally.
They have crying clubs over there, where they do believe that it makes you feel better, so they'll get together as a group and watch these sad movies, or having read these books and talk about them, just to have a group cry.
Well, you just hit something on the head inadvertently, is that they believe that crying makes you feel better. Apparently, it's culturally bound.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, if you live in a society that doesn't think crying makes you feel better, maybe you're kind of a wuss for crying.
Sure.
You're less likely to report feeling better after crying than somebody who lives in a society like Japan.
Where it's supported.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Or where people think that crying does make you feel better.
Right.
It's like zombies.
I cry a lot.
I know.
I'm a very weepy guy.
I know you are.
And I think it said one reason, we'll go ahead and give away a secret, one reason they think men might cry less is because they sweat more. And if crying is a way to release some of these buildup of toxins, then sweat would do that. But
is
I sweat.
BS hypothesis.
I cry. I've got an overactive bladder.
I know. So. I've seen you cry, sweat, and pee all at the same time.
Dude, I'm just constantly leaking fluids.
I know.
And it doesn't help.
Believe me.
Because there's always some kind of fluid right behind it.
And there's always another Coco video coming up.
Ugh.
I'm very eye-rolly as a result.
Oh, yeah? Thank you for that.
So what else do we have?
Well, let's talk about babies when we start crying, obviously, is when we're little crying newborns.
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, you cry, you need help, you want to be changed. You're totally, you're helpless, useless, there's nothing you can do. So you cry,
I'm hungry.
Let everybody know.
I'm sleepy.
But
I'm not sleepy.
I was looking into this, Chuck. Like, that still doesn't quite make sense why babies cry. I mean, we take it for you know, granted. It's just babies cry. That's what they do. But when did the first human baby cry? And why did the first human baby cry? And I looked into it, and there was actually this cool study that put up a few hypotheses that aren't necessarily BS. They're at the very least very interesting of why humans started to cry. And it's like based on natural selection. Like the first few babies that cried were selected, one, because it reduces infanticide,
okay,
which is apparently very common in early cultures.
It reduces?
Yes. And here's why. It emotionally manipulates the parent into not just abandoning the baby or leaving the baby.
Elicits sympathy.
Yes. Uh-huh. But it also basically says, hey, I'm a very healthy, fit baby. You don't want to leave me behind. I'm going to be great at picking berries one day.
Hear these lungs?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, if I were the type of baby you'd just abandon and leave for dead, I may just not even be able to get a good cry going.
So, makes sense. A little whimpering cry might not be as strong.
Exactly. So it was that led to natural selection of crying in babies, and that's why we cry today. At least that's it.
That makes sense.
That's one of the better hypotheses I've run across.
I was just thinking my own hypothesis might be that you know, back then, it's not like the mother was always right over the baby like they are today.
No, that's not true. The opposite is true.
Oh, really? They were more present?
They carried them everywhere.
Oh, well, then, there goes my hypothesis.
That's okay. We
thought they had to cry louder.
It's part of science.
Yeah, okay.
No, I know what you're saying. And that actually, that kind of coincides with the reason why you would cry, because a baby that cries is being abandoned and knows it.
Right.
When you're away from the mother for a very long time, that means mom's gone. She's like 20 clicks that way and not coming back.
Right. That's very sad.
Reduces infanticide.
So, babies cry differently as they grow to communicate different things in a in-tune parent will tell you that, like, from the other room, oh, that cry probably means she needs to be changed. That cry means he's hungry or has fallen out of his crib and is playing with power tools. Maybe. No. And then at 10 months, they think that's when babies start to cry to manipulate their parents for attention. And this, by the way, I thought was a very sexist article. Did you notice some of the lines?
Oh, man. Like, yeah, and that's when your mascara runs.
If a guy had written this, could you imagine the backlash?
No, I totally can. I picked up on that as well. I know what you're about to say. I couldn't even bring myself to underline it. I just ignored it completely.
Well, I highlighted it in green because I wanted to read it. Here's what the line is. Some studies have reported that women in particular continue this manipulative crying throughout their life in order to manipulate others into giving them what they want. For example, forgiveness, pity, or a diamond bracelet.
Tisk.
I mean, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. It's very. I'm even offended.
I was too. I read that to Emily. She's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. The author is in trouble.
Maybe. Well, thought she is.
So you've got manipulative crying at about the age of 10 months. Right,
but there is manipulative crying as adults. I'm not trying to say there's not, because there definitely is. I think
no,
I've even done it as a man.
No,
sure.
For what? What did you want?
Oh, like, you know,
when
you're young and emotional, and your girlfriend breaks up with you, and you just want her back, man. You just want her back. And maybe if you seem sad enough, she'll feel sorry for you and take you back.
So you weren't sad?
Yeah.
If you weren't sad enough to cry naturally,
but I'm still working up the crocodile tears just to.
Crocodiles only cry to excrete excess salt water.
Well, that's why they call them crocodile tears, because there's nothing emotive behind it.
I gotcha.
All right, moving on to adolescence.
Well, not quite yet to adolescence. We should say that up to adolescence, from the time that we're infants to adolescence, boys and girls supposedly cry at about the same frequency and amount.
Yeah.
At least same frequency.
Sure.
There's not a lot of change or difference between the gender. But when we do hit adolescence, and this one makes a lot of sense, boys' testosterone shoots up, and there's a negative correlation with crying. It decreases.
Yeah, they just get angry.
With girls, their crying actually increases, and there's a positive correlation with estrogen production.
Right.
Which, that sounds kind of sexist, but it's true. Physiologically speaking, it's true.
Right.
And in conjunction with estrogen production, you've also got prolactin, which, don't forget, is found in emotional tears.
Right.
And a crying researcher named, is it William Fry?
William Fry and Muriel Langseth. Crying at the Mystery of Tears.
Oh, okay. Fry, I believe, is actually an Alzheimer's researcher, and he just did, like, crying as an amusement. Yeah, he's one of those
guys. To lighten the mood.
Exactly.
After his Alzheimer's research.
But he suggests that girls have about 60% more prolactin in their bodies at any given time than men.
Right.
And that as a result, they tend to cry more and more frequently.
Four times as much as what he says.
Yeah, which is a lot. But again, no one's really done a great, big, huge survey on how often people cry.
Yeah, this one, I don't know how large it was, but it was a study that had people record how many times they cried over the period of 1 year. This one found women cried roughly 64 times compared to 17 in men, mm-hmm. and everyone underestimated, men and women, how much they would have cried.
Right.
But that seems low to me. Or maybe I'm just speaking personally as a weepy guy, you know? It's like 17. I was like, I think 64 is low.
Oh, yeah?
No, I mean, I'll cry. And something I didn't see in here was crying over beauty. That happens to me a lot, too. Over something that's just so beautiful.
Yeah,
like at a concert or a sunrise or something.
At a concert. I'll look at that guy's lighter.
Yeah.
That's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
It is.
What do you mean at a concert?
Well, like the music or something. Like I saw the Ode to Joy at Carnegie Hall one time.
Oh, I got
when
you.
That kicked in, I was so like overwrought, I started crying.
I thought Bonnie Prince Billy concert, not...
No, I would cry at a Bonnie Prince Billy concert. The music moved me enough.
Right, sure. I want to say on behalf of everybody, thank you for sharing so much of yourself in this one. It's making the whole thing way better.
I don't mind. I mean, who cares? I mean, it was.
No, it certainly doesn't.
No.
Rosie Greer says so.
Exactly.
So let's see. Men also, here we arrive at BS Hypothesis 3.
Okay.
Men cry less, Chuck, because they supposedly have smaller tear ducts or lacrimal glands.
Cry fewer tears?
No, less volume.
Volume.
Yeah.
Because women have larger. Okay, well, you think that's BS?
Totally.
Yeah. Well, maybe women are equipped with larger ones because they cry more. You think?
Maybe. Most of the hypotheses and research on crying is done on the back of cocktail napkins for some reason.
According to Women's Health Magazine, though, Josh, men typically only cry when they suffer a major loss. And I find this to be true for a lot of guys. Usually it's anger and frustration. Or anger is how they express frustration and stress. Whereas a woman might be more prone to cry if they're frustrated or stressed.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably true for me, and I'm a weepy guy.
I think, though, that it's a difference in threshold.
Sure.
Possibly, because I think frustration and anger can lead to tears pretty frequently when you reach that point.
Yeah.
I think it's just a difference in threshold. There's a lower threshold, perhaps, in women. Maybe not. I don't know, but I'm saying, like, that would be my take on that.
Or maybe men, maybe the stereotypical history of men not being allowed to cry, or it's just a sign of weakness, maybe that leads to even more frustration, so it's expressed as anger.
Which is funny, because there's a study that's mentioned in this article that they did a survey of people saying, you know, does men crying bother you? And do you think it bothers other people? And most people were like, doesn't really bother me, but yeah, I'm sure it bothers everybody else.
Right.
And like virtually everybody responded that way.
So in other words, people don't mind, they're just not talking about it.
Well, it's just like this social ideal or societal ideal that men shouldn't cry and other people are bothered by it, even though no one's really bothered by it.
Right.
Thanks to Rosie Greer. It's called the Greer effect.
Yeah. He was a football player too. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Oh, yeah. He's a cool dude. He was also in The Thing with Two Heads.
The Thing with Two Heads. The Man with Two Brains?
No. Nope. He and, oh man, it wasn't like, I don't think it was, it may have been William Holden.
Really?
It was a rich scientist who had his head attached to a convict named, played by Rosie Greer's,
really?
Body.
Wow.
And they were like this odd couple. It was like a Creature Feature Saturday Shocker type horror movie from the 70s. The Thing with Two Heads is what it's called. Great movie.
I'm going to get that immediately.
That and The Incredible Melting Man.
I've never heard that one yet.
Oh, that was a good one.
Was that because of the Ice Age?
No.
Remember, that was my hypothesis.
I guess that's right. Yeah, but good memory. All right, well, there's our tangent for this episode.
Getting back to men crying, though, they have done some research, and some people think that a noted man crying in public is actually good for your career and good for your PR.
Like John Boehner?
Sure.
Tim Tebow?
No.
Do you remember when, I think, Florida lost to Tennessee?
Oh, yeah.
And Tebow cried? It was awesome.
I got so much pleasure.
There was some guy who was like, oh, Tebow, your tears taste so sweet. It was beautiful to see.
Yeah. I don't dislike him as much now, though, because of, I'm not like some big fan, but I found that once a player leaves, or coach leaves, the University of Florida, like, I love Coach Spurrier now.
You disgust me for even saying that.
No, once they leave Florida, I don't have that tie
you
anymore.
You keep that to yourself. I found that that's not the case with me. Like, I hate Spurrier still. I can't stand Tebow. Urban Meyer,
yeah,
like, everybody. I can't stand anybody who has Florida stank on them.
Boy.
Rex Grossman, I don't care who you're talking about.
Sure.
I can't stand any of them.
Well, you know, I like that kind of consistency.
I just got so angry, I accidentally licked the mic cover.
That's gross. What else we got here?
Oh, well, why we cry? There's, again, the field's wide open for any quack to come up with an idea and get it published in an article on how stuff works.
Keeps us healthier.
Yeah, by removing toxins, stress-related hormones. But you poo-poo. But do you remember when we did how saunas work?
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about how, yes, you have kidneys and your bladder and your urethra to get rid of all these toxins. You don't really need to sweat. But sweating does get rid of some of it, and every little bit helps, conceivably. Well, these stress-related hormones do exit your body through your tears.
Yeah,
so
I'm not poo-pooing.
It is possible.
And I think it's beyond just the toxins. I believe that holding on to these negative emotions is not good, ultimately, for your heart and your body. I think, you know, I think a good cry could help. I've seen it.
And you've experienced it.
I've experienced it.
You've seen it. Don't back off now.
Yeah, you're right.
People from colitis and ulcers tend to have a poorer view of crying than people who don't have that, which apparently suggests that if you don't cry, you're going to end up with ulcers and colitis. I don't know about that one.
That's true. You gave me something interesting on depression. They studied 44 people with mood disorders. I guess the 45th person just... they couldn't show up, you know. And they said that they were, in fact, more prone to crying than people who they were comparing them to who didn't have the mood disorder. But if you had severe depression, a lot of times you had an inability to cry altogether, which is really sad to me.
Yes, that's very sad.
I guess it's just that dead inside feeling.
God, that's awful.
Yeah.
There's also symptoms of crying excessively. Apparently some people with PTSD.
Right.
One of the symptoms is excessive crying.
Postpartum?
Yeah, postpartum depression, which I didn't know this. 9 to 16% of women suffer from postpartum depression following birth.
What do you think, it was lower?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize it was that prevalent.
Yeah, I did.
And I guess it would have to follow birth to be postpartum depression.
Yes.
So that was redundant.
In this interesting study in Israel, they had men sniff saline solution compared to real human tears.
Uh-huh.
And that they found that when they smelled the real tears, their testosterone dipped.
Yeah.
And brain scan showed less activity in areas associated with sexual arousal. So that made good sense to me, because if someone's really upset and crying, it's not sexually stimulating to you unless you're a real sick person. So I would say it elicits sympathy and lowers your sexy time feelings.
Which kind of supports the idea that, like, a social bonding theory of crying.
Yeah.
You know, you're signaling to somebody else that you're not aggressive, you're submitting, you're allowing yourself to be vulnerable. So just lay off, will you?
Hold me, don't hit me.
Yeah, put the rock down.
Did you ever see the Dr. Katz about the man hugs?
I've seen all of them, but I don't remember that.
There was one bit where he was talking about the man hugs, when the man hug and they'd slap. He was like, men have to do that because I'm holding you, but I'm hitting you.
Right, yeah, I do remember that. I think that was Dama Rare, right?
I think so, yeah.
Dr. Katz, chop, chop, chop.
So good.
You got anything else?
No. And, you know, I'll post that photo of me with the goggles.
It's awesome.
I always forget, but Cooper will remind me. Then he'll turn it into something sick and twisted.
Right. Well, I was crying. We did pretty good with that one. Did a little poo-pooing. Did a lot of explaining. You did a lot of sharing.
No crying.
No.
There's no crying in podcasting.
There is crying on HowStuffWorks.com. You want to go to your favorite search engine, and you want to type in How Crying Works into the search bar, and that will bring up the How Crying Works article on our sister site, TLC.com.
It was definitely TLC.
You want to do that if you want to learn more about crying. And if you can't remember what we said about the onion and why it makes you cry and you want to impress your friends, it's in that article. You'll be very happy to see it. That is on your favorite search engine, but it's on HowStuffWorks. I urge everybody and anybody to go check out our beloved site, HowStuffWorks.com, the mothership connection, HowStuffWorks.com, right?
Indeed.
If you want to let us know how our podcast has gotten you out of hot water, how HowStuffWorks has gotten you out of hot water, if you want to go on the site and find an article and say, hey, podcast on this, we're happy to get links like that. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can go on Facebook at Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can send us a plain old-fashioned email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?